You are now tuned in to the Jags Den Podcast, the official podcast of the Jaguars Wire, brought to you by USA Today Sports Media Group, and also the number one Jaguars podcast on the airwaves.
What is up, everybody? Welcome back to the Jags Den Podcast, the number one Jaguars podcast on the airwaves. And if anybody tells you otherwise, they're lying. Hey, I'm Phil Smith, a.k.a. Philip Filipino. And that's Philip Filipino, F-I-L-I-P-I-N-O. And we are running duos here tonight, me and our leader, James Johnson of the Jaguars Wire. Jay, it's good to be back and at least at two-thirds strength. How's it going tonight, buddy?
Good, man. Just, a little tired running a midnight episode here. And,
it's burning the midnight oil.
Yeah. Pac-12 after dark type of thing. Or what is it? Pac-10 now? I don't know the number.
Yeah, whatever. AEW after dark, whatever they want to call it.
Right. Yeah, man. I mean, of course, it's been a busy week. That has worn on me. But, again, I love providing people with content, so we're here.
Yeah, week is an understatement, I think. We got a lot of stuff to talk about here tonight, you guys, and Jacob couldn't join us here. Like I said, it's like 12:30 Eastern time, so
right. Can't blame him.
I was doing some other work, and so was Jay, and we record when we can, and hopefully we have some exciting news to share with you guys down the pipeline. We got some exciting stuff going on. Before we continue and get into this week's topics, just want to, of course, make sure that you are checking out jaguarswire.usatoday.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at the Jaguars Wire, the podcast at Jags Den Podcast. You can find Jay at sportsgrind_Don, myself, as I mentioned, Phil the Filipino, F-I-L-I-P-I-N-O, and our buddy Jacob at _JDella. Make sure that you're checking out and following the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and Spotify, as well as the Audio Boom Network via USA Today. And if you want to support the podcast, one of the best ways you can do that is go on to iTunes and drop that 5-star review if you feel like we have earned it. So, Jay, we're going to get right into the big topic of the week. And, of course, we're not going – no quick hits here tonight. We're just going to get into the big news, all right? We're not going to sugarcoat it or anything.
Right.
The Jaguar Dog Park. Let's talk about that. I feel like we haven't talked about that enough this year.
Pet paradise, baby. No. Oh, man. I got to take Snuggles there, man.
Exactly, right? Yeah, man, that place, that's honestly the happiest place in the stadium because those dogs don't know what's going on, and they have no loyalty to anybody but their own people. They don't care about the Jags because they're living much better lives than we are. But anyway, of course, what we're going to talk about first is the Jalen Ramsey trade. It finally happened, and when we first saw the Marcus Peters trade, it was interesting to me because they just had put Aqib Talib on IR. Mm-hmm. So I asked you, is this maybe a destination for Jalen? And you had mentioned, there were ties between the, of course, Dave Caldwell and the GM over in LA. And then in a matter of maybe an hour or so, if that, we heard the Jalen news. Of course, he was traded to the LA Rams for two first round picks as well as a fourth. So, Jay, how did we get to this point? What was your reaction? And what now for both of these teams, for both the Jags and the Rams? Maybe people might be a little sick of, hearing about Jalen. But as you said earlier, Jay, we got a job to do. So, why don't you go ahead and start off with this Jalen news?
Yeah, so, we actually explained how we got to this point in a podcast that I never got to post, me and you, but make no mistake about it, this one is going to get posted. But, we got to this point with the Tom Coughlin situation. We all heard, I think Jake Glazer was one of the people to report it. Stephen A. Smith reported it. They had a meeting. And Jalen left the meeting frustrated. Only God knows what was said in that meeting. Hopefully it wasn't anything too bad. between those two. But Jalen left it feeling disrespected, and that caused him to want to trade. He called his agent, David Mulugeta, and the rest is history. So, I mean, I would think it wasn't, I don't know, like, I don't, we weren't there, so we can't say what was said in the meeting, but I would think it's not that bad along the lines of racial or whatever the case may be, because I feel like Jalen would have told his agent, and his agent would have, you know, relayed that through social media. He's very active on social media, by the way. Or, you know, Jalen would have at least told some teammates, because, of course, you don't want your teammates playing for an organization that, you know, is allowing this. So it was probably something we don't know. I guess I won't go into details like of what it could be, because we don't know. But, you know, in this situation, I believe both sides, and me and you have talked about this, I think both sides, their hands are dirty in this situation. And I think the organization is wrong for how they handled it, because I think, like, Doug Marrone should have handled any issues that he had with Jalen Ramsey, not Tom Coughlin, because Doug Marrone is the head coach of this football team. So, you know, for Tom Coughlin to step in and have a meeting with Ramsey, you know, I guess he's, like, overstepping his boundaries there, because, again, I think that's kind of Doug Marrone's type of thing to handle, or whatever the issue may have been. And then on Jalen's side, you know, I've said this on my podcast with Josh on the Back Shoulder Fade. Please feel free to check that out. I just think, like, he could have been more mature about certain situations. And I think, like, you could tell, like, his agent kind of got into his head, or his agent was talking to him, because he was saying things that weren't, like, characteristic of him. Me and you talked about that too. I think me and you exchanged texts about that. But
yeah,
the whole thing, you know, my body's tired, and, you know, this, that, and the other. Like, at the moment I heard that on the week 17 podcast, or the 17 weeks podcast by Uninterrupted, I was like, this don't sound like Jalen. He's never really been a guy that complains, you know. Like, if he was dealing with injuries, he's always been a guy that you really didn't know about. He didn't telegraph it or talk about it. And he was more along the lines of a guy like, look, whatever I'm going through, I'm a play. That's always been him, in my opinion, at least. We don't know him personally. So, long story short, that's why I think, like, both sides' hands are kind of dirty in this situation. But I think the organization more so looks bad than Jalen. Because at the end of the day, they're giving up a franchise player and a generational talent.
Yeah, and that's one thing that I actually mentioned on Facebook today, and some people in the fan base took exception to it. And I want to echo what you were saying, right? There's definitely blame on both sides here. Jalen, I think you have mentioned this before, I think does have a little maturing and growing up to do. And I'm not a fan of how some of this was handled. I'm definitely not. And as much as I do not like Doug Marrone, can't put your hands on your coach, man. Can't do it. Yeah.
I left that out too. Yeah. That was, you know, that to me, like, that was just, you know, even, albeit it was a light shove, you know what I'm saying? But right. Still, like, Doug doesn't put his hands on you. You don't put your hands on him. Now, I did say this now, like, Doug, luckily Doug was the type of coach that, you know, Doug grew up in the Bronx. Like, it was no big deal to him. But, you know, it's some other coaches that might not allow that. It might not be too accepting to that. But, you know, that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, it, you know, like I said, from the start, not okay. But at the same time, what my main sentiment was that I had posted that, you know, it did get some people agree. I would say it's probably about a 30% out of the people that commented agreed with me. And it's, I feel like this whole situation really reflects poorly on the coaching staff in the front office, maybe more so the front office than the coaching staff, because they should not have let it get to this point.
Right.
And that's a testament against Tom Coughlin and – why am I blanking on our GM?
Dave Caldwell.
Dave Caldwell. It should not have gotten to this point. First off, you know, Jalen really fell to us at 5. You know, there was – everyone thought he was going to be taken by the Cowboys, and then, you know, they went Zeke, and then the rest is history. So you got a guy automatically who's feeling shunned and disappointed, especially a guy like Jalen, who probably felt like he could go number one. That who did go number one that year, 2016? Was it the quarterbacks? Was it the two quarterbacks?
That was the year with Leonard Williams, wasn't it? That went. It was 2016. But while you continue to talk, I'll look that up.
Okay. Yeah. So I mean, the guy that fell to you, and a guy who has. And I think it was Mina Kimes I was listening to earlier. She was on Golic and Wingo, who has literally been the best draft pick that Caldwell has had. You can make the argument that who the second and third best are, but number one has been Jalen. And then really it's a guy he couldn't have missed. You know what I mean? If you just fell into his lap and like, oh, here you go, best player available, easy pick. And yeah. I was in the stadium that night when we took him in, and the place went absolutely nuts. Like, and yeah, I still have a video of it on my phone because it was like, holy crap, we got that guy. It was similar to when we got Justin Blackman. Remember that? We were at Ale House and we got Justin Blackman.
We got video of that too.
Yep. And you know, it was similar to that because so often this team, this franchise, does not get that guy. You know, we always like, man, I would love for this guy to be here, you know, but instead we take Luke Jokel.
Well, lately the tides have turned. You know what I'm saying? Like we've been getting lucky a little lately, like with Miles Jack and Allen. And
Josh Allen. And yeah. let's hope that 4 years down the road we're not going through this with Josh Allen. You know what I mean?
I know, right?
Let's just hope that. But what the other thing I was saying is, and I think Jacob also echoed this as well when the trade happened, is if you do not get the right person in the front office, these picks do not matter. They won't matter at all. So hopefully they get the right guys in there. And you know, a lot of the things I've been seeing are, oh, Jalen quit on us, and you know, blank Jalen. You know, and I get people's feelings are hurt because they love the city and they love the team. I get it, but they still need to direct some of this anger and frustration at the people that are directly involved at the top. And I think, and I told you this earlier, I think. Now that Shad is paying attention, I think that bodes poorly for the future of David Caldwell and Tom Coughlin, because I think now he's seen what's going on. He sees that there's frustration and there's cracks in the foundation. And I think that means that hopefully we're going to see some change very, very soon. And even I think Tony is paying a little bit more attention, even though he's got his own thing going on. I think even he is paying attention more because – you know, at the end of the day, they still need this franchise to be successful so they can turn a profit. It's a business,
right?
You know, they don't want this team to be a joke. They don't want to be the owners of it, of the Jaguars again. You know what I mean?
Right,
not where we want to go. This team has too much talent, so too much young talent to go all out Dolphins like you and I were talking about earlier today.
Yeah,
they're too good to go to be that. Honestly, they really are. So. That's one thing I think people are missing, but we'll see. What did you think of the compensation? Do you think we got a good compensation as far as, you know, there were reports that the Eagles were calling pretty much every week. The Chiefs were probably involved. The Ravens, you know, gave us that offer earlier in the season. You know, what did you think of the compensation that they got back from LA?
Well, first I wanted to go back to something that you were saying about, you know, you think there'll be change in terms of the future, in terms of the front office. And I do too, because one thing I did want to echo from you is that when Jalen Ramsey left and Shad Khan had to trade ultimately his franchise player, I think with that came probably the jobs of Tom Coughlin and Dave Caldwell. And I mean, I think like, I don't know how much of this we can blame on Dave because he's not really in charge anymore. You know what I'm saying? He's just, you know, he's just under Tom, and I guess he has to answer to orders and, you know, do what Tom says do, or, you know, Tom's the leader of the front office. So, but that being said, like I said, yeah, the fact that Shad Khan had to even get involved in this too, that's another thing. And you know, he's a busy man. He's a billionaire, for crying out loud. Like, he manufactures a good majority of the world's bumpers. You know what I'm saying? So, the fact that he had to get involved, and he, you know, like, it was reports saying that, I think from, it was from AP Mark Lone, that he had to stick around of, you know, which is kind of not typical of Shad Khan. He stuck around for some days around the facility to make sure things were going right after Jalen requested the trade. So this was after weeks two's loss to the Houston Texans. So that being said, though, I think, yeah, like the fact that he had to trade Jalen Ramsey will have repercussions in itself for the front office, and that being Coughlin and Caldwell. So, like, you know, while they did get in a lot of good picks, which I'm going to talk on because you just asked about the compensation, I don't think they'll be using those picks, or at least not Tom Coughlin and Dave Caldwell will. So, yeah, on the compensation, yeah, that, me and you, all, we said it all along. Like, I would not trade Jalen Ramsey for anything less than two firsts. And they got two firsts and some. You know, like, I looked at the Khalil Mack deal. I can't remember, like, what the specifics of it was. But I don't think it was nearly as good as that one. But that's not to say this wasn't a good deal. So, I mean, they set themselves up pretty good in terms of the future. And who knows, you know, if Gardner Minshew's not the guy, they could package those picks up. That's four first rounders they could package up and, you know, come up and get a quarterback. So, you know, that is where it all starts for a new GM or a franchise that's trying to rebuild or whatever the case may be. So that's good for them. I do like that. Another thing I guess I'll say is with the Rams, they are kind of a sketchy team. They're kind of iffy team. And me and you and Jacob had talked about this. Jacob was saying that the Baltimore Ravens deal was a better one. And me and you were like, no, not at all. I forget the specifics. I think it was a first, a second, and Hayden Hurst or something like that.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was it.
Okay, so, I mean, like, look, man, the Baltimore Ravens are a very savvy, smart front office. Even without Ozzie Newsome, who retired, I think Eric DaCosta's running that ship now, who's been under Ozzie for many, many years. They're a smart, smart franchise. The fact that they put Hayden Hurst in that trade, to me, especially after taking Hayden Hurst just a year ago, says that they're giving up on him, in my opinion. Even though we need a tight end, even though he's from Jacksonville, yada, yada, yada. To me, I think they're a savvy enough front office to where it was telling that Hayden Hurst was in that deal. And besides, like you, me and you said, like, the Jaguars need two first round picks for an all-pro talent that is under the age of 24, multiple time pro bowler. Like, anything less is unacceptable. And furthermore, I think this is a better deal, and a good deal. It's a better one than the Baltimore Ravens situation, because the Baltimore Ravens, to me, are a little bit more stable. I think the Baltimore Ravens are going to be in the playoffs this year. I don't know if I can, as talented as the Rams are, I don't know if I can say that for the Rams. And if they get into the playoffs, I could see where they could be one and done. So those picks, the good thing about it is those picks could be significantly higher in the pecking order, in the draft order, than most expect. I mean, I know people look at the Rams and look at how talented they are, but they're not playing to their potential. And I think the Ravens are a much more stable organization, and therefore the draft compensation is much better.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the for sure to start on what you were saying first about the Ravens deal. Yeah, they don't need Hayden Hurst anymore. You know, they got Mark Andrews, right. and he's flourishing. And here's the thing: we just drafted Josh Oliver, who hopefully will make his debut this weekend that you were writing about earlier. And mm-hmm. I mean, why would you take on a Hayden Hurst when you may already have a better version of him on the roster just right. waiting to be cleared? You know what I mean? You know, it's unfortunate what happened to O'Shaughnessy. And I believe the Hayden Hurst offer came before O'Shaughnessy got hurt, but right. they seem to, for whatever reason, be okay with Jeff Swaim. Mm-hmm. But I think that's because they have very, very high hopes for Oliver. And you don't take on Hayden Hurst if you already have a guy that you think is probably better than him on the roster. Right. So that was that I think was out of the question to begin with. And just to talk about what you said earlier, the Bears got two firsts. The Raiders got a two firsts, a third, and a sixth round pick for Khalil Mack in that trade.
So, yeah,
and
I would better. Have to look at.
Yeah, and I would have to look at what they've selected. And that's another thing too, is you're most likely not going to get a talent on par with Jalen.
No,
what you need to do is hit on those picks. You got to get starters with these picks. And I was saying earlier, I'm not even confident that the Rams are going to make the playoffs. They may be the third best team in their own division. You know, I mean, you got to look at the, well, of course, I think, man, the way that the, and I'm going to go off a little bit on tangent here, but the way the Seahawks are playing, they might be the best team in the NFC. I mean, they are solid. The way Russell Wilson is playing, he might be the MVP right now. And then here tonight, we saw, unfortunately, we saw the Madden curse pop up again. Patrick Mahomes just went down. Yeah. But I mean,
I think he's okay, though. He just popped his knee. That's what the reports say. Thank God.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, hopefully he'll be okay. But between the other teams in the conference, I mean, in their own, and then also the Niners, who were doing things the Patriot way. You know, you had a great defense and then a quarterback who's doing just enough. So, I mean, you look at – so one of those two teams is going to take up one of those wild card spots between the Niners and the Seahawks. And then the other spot, you have the Vikings, you have the Bears, the Panthers. So those are three teams right now, especially the Panthers. And, you know, God forbid the Vikings figure things out. That's a scary roster as well. Offensively, the Rams are just not where they need to be right now. And Jalen Ramsey, last I checked, does not throw or run with the football on the side. So I think – and we – man, the Rams in a year or two – are going to be in salary cap hell, and they kind of are already. They are going to be a mess. They're going to be a disaster. But really, this was all about. I think this was, as much as they are in win now mode, I think a lot of this had to do with, we're going into this big shiny new stadium next year. Let's do whatever we need to put a product on the field, hopefully, or at least names on the field,
right,
that are going Box to draw. Office. I mean, exactly. Yep. You know, they. That's what that city is all about, man. The show, and Jalen's gonna give him a show. So I really think that there's a chance that they might not even be in the playoffs. So I'm happy they got two first. I think you said earlier in the day the 2021 pick may be really good. It may end up being something in the top 15 because of where the Rams have aligned themselves as far as salary cap and just fielding a team. We'll see what happens with them next year. So, and then a fourth round pick, that's still good. That's a good value pick. And I think if you get the right people in here that are smart enough and savvy enough, and they have a guy in mind, then they can maneuver these picks into something even better. You know, I think that's what the play will be come draft time, is how are they going to use this capital to move up or move around and get the guys that they really, really want. Is it going to be a quarterback? Probably not. If I were the fan base, I wouldn't look into that. They invest a lot of money into Nick Foles, and I think, you know, with what Gardner has shown, I think you probably keep mentoring him. You know what I mean? Maybe, you know, see what happens there. My concern with Gardner is what I told you earlier, is his arm strength is not is probably not NFL level, but he might have the intangibles to be okay. He might have the intangibles, and you really can't overlook that. So we'll see what happens. But I think they got good. This is probably hopefully the best offer they got on the table. I wouldn't have taken this same deal from Kansas City, or maybe even Philadelphia, honestly, unless Philly came through. If they were, my hope was, if they were calling every single week, my hope was that they would eventually get desperate and overpay. You know what I mean? I was hoping that would happen at some point. I did not want to see him in the NFC East, but if they were going to overpay, then, you know, take that deal. So yeah, we'll see. Well, of course, we really won't know exactly how this trade pans out for a couple of years. So, you know, who do you think won this trade? If you did want to declare a winner,
In terms of, I'll do this. First place was Jalen Ramsey, because he ultimately got out of Jacksonville like he wanted to. Second place was the Jags. Because while they did lose a franchise player, that's why they didn't get first place, of course. They were able to get two first-round picks and some extra for him. Third place is the Los Angeles Rams, because they've crippled themselves, like me and you just talked about, in the future. And, you know, if I'm not mistaken, they have what, no first round picks for the next 5 years. Is you're going to be in salary cap hell. You're going to have to build through the draft. And to not be able to do that without, to be, well, to have to do that without first round picks is very difficult. So you're basically going to have to build your team around second and third and fourth round talents. And God knows it's even harder to do that past those rounds. So I think, you know what I'm saying? Like the Rams, they, you know, the team that they have now, they have to win with. And if they don't, it's gonna, the, you know what, it's gonna hit the fan and it's gonna go down real fast and relatively quickly. And people are gonna be like, what in God's name happened to this team?
Yeah, I'd probably go there, and then maybe the agent is 1A, you know, getting his guy,
Yeah, Mulugeta, yeah.
getting his guy what he wants. And I mean, this guy, he's a proven commodity in the league, that agent. But yeah, I would probably echo that as well. Yeah, the Rams, man, you know, it'd be interesting to see what the what our friends over at it's Rams Talk, right? I believe is the name of the podcast.
Yeah,
What
Rams
is it?
Talk
Yeah,
with
I'm very interested to
shout outs
see.
to them, by the way. My guys,
Yeah,
man.
I would like to see what they're thinking as far as the future. But yeah, they are absolutely in win now mode, and it better pan out. I mean, you still got a guy in Jared Goff who a lot of people aren't sold on, but he's making a lot of money. You got Todd Gurley who, health-wise, you don't know what's going to happen with him. You know, you got what are you going to do with Brandon Cooks, and you know, with that contract, and then Aaron Donald, and man, you're going to have to pay Jalen pretty, maybe if not next year, but very, very soon. And man, it's going to be interesting to watch. And you just hope that Jacksonville can turn these picks into some kind of value. Ultimately, do you think Jalen plays out the long term in LA, or do you think he's going to have a Deion style career and move around quite a bit?
Yeah, I think he's going to move around. I don't think he plays his career out in LA because of the reasons we just mentioned. And you know, if you're Les Snead, like, who's to say you can go to Jalen Ramsey and say, hey, I'm paying Aaron Donald to be the second or the first highest paid defensive player in NFL history. I'm paying Jared Goff to be the fourth highest paid player in defense, in offensive history. I'm paying Todd Gurley to be the second highest paid running back in history of the NFL. You know, is Jalen going to want to hear that? And a lot of people will say, well, hey, they own his rights. Well, he just showed us here in Jacksonville that he could get out of it if he wanted to. And, you know, he could scheme his way up out of LA if he wanted to. But furthermore, like with Jalen, I don't think that LA is necessarily in his long-term plans either, because he said it on Bussin' with the Boys that he wants to go to either Nashville. Obviously, that's the Titans. That's his home. That's the team he grew up watching, this, that, and the other. His family's there. And the other one was the Las Vegas, or is it? Oh, yeah, Las Vegas,
Raiders.
Oakland
Yeah.
Raiders, whatever you want to call them, right
Yeah.
now. And I think, if I can recall, he said the Las Vegas Raiders because, and don't quote me on this, but I think it was because they don't have any state income tax similar to Florida. So to me, that says that he might not like getting a big time contract in the state of California, because we all know those taxes hit differently there.
Oh,
And
yeah.
I think, like, from that
He'll see
perspective,
that his very first game check.
yeah, he's gonna notice a big time cut in terms of those taxes, because we all know the saying, Uncle Sam is gonna get his. And that's exactly be the case for the highest paid corner in football. So for all of those reasons, but mainly that reason, the last one, I don't think he stays there.
Yeah, like I mean, he draws a lot of comparison and to Dion, and Dion's a very big fan of Jalen as well. So I can definitely see him going. Man, but my worst fear is he ends up in Tennessee, man, and we got to play him twice a year. And oh God, I really just don't want that. But I could definitely see him playing out his career in multiple places. And which is, you know, with a guy like that, it wouldn't be too surprising. There's not going to be any shortage of suitors for him either. So yeah, I can definitely see him. But I can definitely I can say, and I think I speak for you as well, Jay. I definitely wish him the best. Hope he does some growing. Hope that he is happy, genuinely happy. You know, and wish his family the best. You know, of course, he had his ups and downs here in Jacksonville, but overall, I don't think he ever really did anything that was with any an intentional ill content. I do hope he does, like I said, some growing, and wish him the best of luck, truly, because he's a great player, and we enjoy watching him play, and we'll see what's next for him. But you know, we want to move forward and see what's next for this team and this franchise, and we focus on the guys that are here in the locker room. That's the cliche that the coaches, you know, like to say. We focus on who's here and who's suiting up. So, you know, we'll move on from the Jalen stuff, as everybody seems to want us to do, and we'll talk about the last week's game against the New Orleans Saints. So as far as individual stats go for the Jags, nothing really standing out. I kind of predicted that we may see Gardner struggle here a little bit. Minshew Mania took a little bit of a pit stop this past week. He went 14-29, 163 yards, one interception. He had some crazy stat, like it was his first interception, like 164 throws, something insane. I think since week one, that was his first interception since week one. But he, you know, he didn't really ever look comfortable, couldn't get in sync with his receivers. DeeDee Westbrook led the way in terms of yardage, three catches, 53 yards, six catches, 46 yards for Leonard Fournette, three catches, 43 yards for DJ Chark. And then on the run, the running game, Leonard Fournette struggled, 20 carries, 72 yards. Again, didn't really ever seem to get anything going. On the Saints side of things, Teddy Bridgewater continuing to impress, as I mentioned earlier, 24-36, 240 yards, and then the game's only touchdown. And then Latavius Murray, 8 carries, 44 yards. Alvin Kamara, 11 carries, 31 yards, who I thought would have a much more successful day, but really it was just a defensive struggle all the way around. Michael Thomas did find some success, eight catches for 89 yards on his end. So yeah, like I said, kind of in terms of excitement, not a whole lot here. Hopefully fans weren't too warm out there. But yeah, as far as the box score, you know, we'll get into the good, the bad, and the ugly for the entire game. We'll start with the good. Defense continuing to look pretty solid. We saw them have a good performance against Houston, and unfortunately the offense couldn't come up. We saw similar results here in earlier, you know, a Houston team that may be proving to be one of the best teams in the league. That's yet to be seen. But as far as the offense, specifically against the run, only allowing 65 total rushing yards. What did you see there from the defense that stood out for you and that should have Jaguar fans, even with the absence of Jalen, what should have us, you know, a little optimistic?
Yeah, well, it seems like with the defense, this team is so inconsistent in terms of the two main units. When the defense shows up, the offense don't show up. And when the offense shows up, the defense doesn't show up. So, you know, it's just been inconsistency on both ends. That being said, they corrected their problem. And the Jaguars have shown the ability to do this on defense. Todd Wash has shown the ability to do this. That's all. That's kind of part of the issue, is that it's never consistent. But they corrected their biggest mistake from week six, which was stopping the run. Christian McCaffrey still is running from the Jacksonville Jaguars at this point. He almost ran to freaking Savannah on us. And then here we have a performance where Alvin Kamara and Latavius Murray and company, they're held to, what was it, 65 yards on the day.
Yeah.
So they, you know what I'm saying, they did what they had to do in terms of stopping the run. And Sean Payton even said it in halftime, like, we got to get the run going or this game is going to be low scoring. It's not going to go our way. We need to find balance. The Jaguars took that, at least the balance part of it, away from the New Orleans Saints. And again, this is a New Orleans Saints with Teddy Bridgewater at quarterback as opposed to Drew Brees. So they took away the run from them. And part of that was, you know, I think it came out this week that Alvin Kamara, that injury, the ankle injury, I believe it is really bothering him. And maybe that was part of it. But I mean, the Jaguars just, you know, they played sound in the run game. So that was good. And Hopefully it continues. Like, we don't want to be into next week against the Bengals and who is it? I think they got Joe Mixon running up and down the field on us. Like, you know, now it's a matter of the consistency against the run. And if they could do that for the most part, you know, they can kind of get by with their defense, because again, you're making teams one dimensional, and typically teams can't win in those type of circumstances. So, you know, I guess we can give kudos to Ty Watch, who I've been hard on, and all of us have been hard on, for correcting the mistake. Heading forward, will it continue to be that way? And also, you know, they do need to tighten up against the pass. I mean, Trey Herndon, you know, he's no Jalen Ramsey, and he has been getting beat here and there. So we'll see. But that's another topic for another time, I guess.
Yeah, I don't think we have enough time to discuss Trey Herndon now. But you know, hey, he's the guy now, and we'll hope, we definitely hope that he's able to step up. So you know, and of course, the opposite end of there, as I mentioned, Gardner Minshew struggled pretty bad, 14-29, 163 yards, and that interception. The Saints made him play for the pocket, play from the pocket, and you know, a lot of things that we've seen as far as Minshew magic. You know, we've seen him get out of those situations, and that wasn't there. What did the Saints do, you know, to keep him bottled up and to just keep him uncomfortable? He never got into a rhythm at any point in this game. And what did the Saints do? I mean, honestly, I think what people are missing is the Saints have an excellent defense. You know, they've got a great front line, and then you know, you back that up with Marshawn Lattimore in the backfield along with others. You know, what were the Saints able to do to keep Minshew magic from raining another week?
Yeah, you know, they actually it was a podcast I listened to recently. It was Locked On Jags. I think T-Wig did a good job of talking about this on his podcast. But what they did was, in terms of stopping Minshew, is they used the old one gap and hold technique. And basically the one gap and hold concept is people probably heard your man Pete Carroll talk about it, but it's basically where they're not like rushing with full intent to get to the quarterback. Basically, instead they're rushing to close down any lanes between the guards and the centers and so on and so forth for the quarterback to escape out of. So basically they're making them play within the confines of the pocket. And we saw it was one time where Minshew tried to get out of the pocket, and the defensive tackle, I forget who it was, I don't think it was Sheldon Rankins, but it was somebody else, was there before he could get to the line of scrimmage, and he basically met him at the line of scrimmage. So they basically looked at that Denver Broncos tape, especially, and how Minshew was able to get out of the pocket and extend plays. And because, as we know, in today's day and age, when you extend plays for more than 4 seconds, chances are the offense is going to come away with the ball in some capacity, the receiver, or it's going to end up being a big run from the quarterback getting out of the pocket. Or sometimes, in some cases, it end up, if it goes on too long, it'll end up being a hold for either side of the ball. So that being said, they didn't want Gardner Minshew prolonging plays because that's where he's really flourished over time, at least the last 2 weeks or so. And they did a good job of that and keeping that pocket tight and making him play from the pocket. And again, he's not the tallest guy in the world. What is he, 6 feet? Doesn't have the strongest arm in the world. So a lot of the throws he was trying to make, you know, these throws were coming in a lot of traffic, by the way, too, because they were playing a lot of people in the being that they weren't rushing that hard, but they were playing a lot of people in the passing lanes. So really, it was just a matter of Dennis Allen. Really, the predominant pass rusher in the game was Cameron Jordan. The rest of the defensive line, they kind of had them on chill, like, hey, rush, but you know what I'm saying? Don't get too out of place or too carried away with the rush. So therefore Minshew won't be able to escape in the pocket, and it worked magnificently. I mean, Cam Jordan got 2 sacks. He threw his first pick in forever, like you said, which was a misfire to DJ Chark. And, you know, he didn't know what to do from the confines of the pocket. And that's something that John DeFilippo has owned up to in terms of, you know, how the game plan went. And it's something they're going to have to try and fix heading forward, because more teams are going to attack them in that manner. The only issue is there aren't a lot of teams that have the talent that the Saints do. So You know, I guess that's the good thing you could take out of this is that Gardner Minshew is not going to be facing a bunch of Marshawn Lattimore's and Cameron Jordan's and DeMario Davis's and whoever else, Von Bell, whoever else they got on their defense throughout each week, basically.
Yeah, it's a definitely a learning experience for him. I think it's good to get it out of the way. You know, of course, everyone just expecting, you know, these amazing things from him every single week. And I think what's getting lost is we all still forget he is a rookie. He's exactly. doing non-rookie things, but he's still a rookie. And I think to get this one out of the way early, if they feel like they found a gem, you know, late, if they fell into this, and it's okay for him he's going to struggle from time to time. He's not going to be able to do anything, especially when there's no running game and, you know, people aren't able to get open. This wasn't all on him, and, you know, these lofty expectations. And I think one thing that people are, one reason they're so drawn to him is he's just very, very aware of his surroundings. He knows this can come to an end at any moment. And even when he's having this success, one thing that I love so much, and maybe all quarterbacks do this, but, you know, just me noticing it, you know, after he had that incredible play in Denver where, you know, Brett Favre getting out of the pocket and throwing that touchdown, he's celebrating on the field. Yeah, absolutely. But then immediately seeing him on that tablet and just looking at what he's going to do next and everything. And I think that's that, like I said, I think a lot of quarterbacks, of course, they all do that, but it was just, I like that he's constantly trying to learn and get better for this team. So, you know, we'll see what he does next up against I think he's in line for a rebound game against the Cincinnati team. That's just not very good. You know, yeah. Don't know what's going on. They are the Bungles again. And, you know, for a team that's unfortunately where they're at for that fan base. But the good, getting back to the positives, we got Josh Lambeau, who we signed on this day. Not only did we sign him on this day, you guys, we marked the release of Jason Myers, who just for whatever reason could not get it going here. And you know what's crazy? He was a Pro Bowler last year.
Yeah,
you know?
Man.
And, which is proof that sometimes you just need a change of scenery. And as much grief that I cannot say that I was ever the bigger person. I gave that guy so much crap. I was happy to see him get some success, but not only
did you
did
make
we,
the account or something.
Yeah, I made the account. Did Myers make it on Twitter? And then all of a sudden, he started making field goals. So it was totally useless. I have no idea what happened to that account. But yeah, he scored the team's only points, and he's now made 52 of 55 field goal attempts since joining the Jaguars in October of 2017. He's got a 94.5% field goal percentage, good for the highest in team history. And he's now 14 of 14. On the year. You know, Jay, with so many teams having struggles at the kicking position, doesn't it feel great to just have this guy who seems to be automatic? And you look at the Chargers now who have been struggling, like, how did they let this guy go? But again, maybe an instance of change of scenery
right.
helped this guy out.
Yeah, I probably need to do an article on this, not necessarily on the Jags wire, but like independently, because I've always said this, special teams is becoming a lost art in today's football. And, you know, when something like that happens, I think it goes back to you got to go back to the fundamentals of football. Well, the lowest levels, you know what I'm saying? Or you know, go back to the high school levels. Is special teams being coached properly on the high school level, the college level, the NFL level? Because it seems to be a lost art, especially on the two highest levels, and that's college and the professional league. So, you know, that's probably something that needs to be stressed early, you know, and maybe, you know, the NFL needs to look into that because, yeah, it is becoming a lost art. And, you know, like you said, in a game where there is so much special team struggles going on and kickers missing kicks left and right. And you got the Tampa Bay Buccaneers who drafted Roberto Aguayo, what was it, 4, 5, 6 years ago, spending a third round pick on him. And now he's not even on a team, if I can recall. Like, it's just craziness going on in terms of special teams. But yeah, in a day and age where you have things like that going on and struggling, kickers struggling left and right, it's great to have a guy like Josh Lambo who's found a resurgence. And I think a lot of it might be they might need to just give some credit to Joe DeCamillis, who is one of the better special teams coaches in football. Although, you know, we struggled with a penalty problem early in his tenure when he was named the special teams coach. But now he's really, really, especially since linking up with Josh Lambo, he's done his career some justice. He's got him kicking confidently, and that's all you can ask for. You know, despite all of this bad that we got to talk about, be very, very thankful that we got a kicker that if it came to it, a game winning field goal, we got a guy that can go out there that we could be confident in to make a field goal for us. So, you know, I'm glad they have him, man. And words can't express, like, you know, how underrated he is in this league.
Yeah, speaking of Roberto Aguayo, trying to find out if he was drafted, because he was actually in the XFL draft over the weekend, and he was in that pool, but I don't know if he was drafted or not. The first thing that comes up is the Tampa Bay Vipers, and if he ended up back in Tampa Bay, that would be hilarious. I hope that happened, but I can't seem to find it. One other kind of sad note that I see in here is that Trent Richardson did not get drafted. 40 running backs were taken, and Trent Richardson was not one of them. So, man, that guy's career just continues to be sad. So we will not be seeing Trent Richardson in the XFL. But anyway, I digress. But yeah, it's great having a guy in Josh Lambo just continuing the line of Josh's we've had in that role, of course, with the previous guy showing that had a lot of success there being Josh Scobie. Now, things didn't necessarily end the best way for Josh, but it seems like he, as far as Scobie, that is, seems like he's gotten over it because he's pretty interactive with the fan base now. So it's good.
Yeah. You know, he was with the BCB this weekend. Did you see that?
I did.
He tailgated. Him and Puzz tailgated with the BCB.
Oh, I did see that. I did see that. Yeah. So it's good to see that Scobie is back, and he doesn't have any hard feelings. So back on the negative sides of things, the fan experience, apparently the heat, of course, was another issue. Ticket line issues. This is just something, honestly, like I don't – Up until like the last couple of years, I remember the game we went to a couple of years ago when in 2017, the Jag-Seahawks game, and just how long it took us to get into the stadium was absurd, you know. And, yeah. And I've been to, you know, I went to some games in Dallas, and of course that's a much more – it's a larger operation out there at AT&T Stadium, and I didn't have any kind of problems getting into the stadium. And this has just been, I don't know what's going on. I'll be going to the Jets game next week. Maybe I can give you guys an update. But man, what have you heard just from through Twitter or from fans? What do you think is going on with just the fan experience? I mean, we're supposed to have this great, you know, we keep talking about this, you know, this great time that fans are supposed to be having. We got pools and we got dog park and we got all this stuff. But
right.
It doesn't matter if we can't get into the dang stadium, and then also we're melting. So what do you mean? What the heck is going on?
Yeah, man. I can only go off of what I was seeing on Twitter, and yeah, man, like a lot of people, I was even reading some people saying like the ticket scanners didn't work in terms of, you know, the digital ticketing. So that was the issue. And like you said, the heat. So, I mean, like the only thing, like being that I haven't been there personally, I can't really say like what the personal experience was like. But I can say this, like they probably just need to disperse the ticket lines better, you know, and they probably can't do that this year. But, you know, the way that you enter, in which you enter the stadium, maybe they need to make more entrances into the stadium and more organized entrances into the stadium at that. Because look, man, standing outside 20, 30 minutes in the Florida heat is no joke. And especially for a team for fans to come in and watch a bad team, you need to make at least getting into the stadium not a hassle. And I mean, going to watching the team on the field when you're in the stadium, you know, I guess you really, it's out of Shad Khan's control, kind of, because he's not the guy that concocts the roster of the product that's on the field. But You know, it sounds like it's time, and me and you have talked about this. I think we've been very good about doing this over other podcasts and talking about the stadium situation and the add-ons and this, that, and the other, and the tax money and all of that, the Daly's Place situation. But the next add-on, which we talked about, Lot J and some other projects that's going on, the next add-on that needs to come with Lot J is some shade, point blank period, especially – God forbid we go into a rebuild mode and people got to watch just a terrible team on the field and sit through the sun and bake through that. But, yeah, they definitely need to look into something like what the Miami Dolphins have, like the canopy or perhaps a full roof, which would be more expensive. And, you know, that's a whole nother story for a whole nother time as to who going to pay for it and this, that, and the other. But Shotgun definitely needs to look into that. I mean, I guess you could say, why should the fans have to pay for that? But that's one of the things that the fans, like, if it came to it, they probably wouldn't mind, at least those that have been to the game and have suffered through these, like, these terrible heat conditions. And people have been having heat strokes, and just God bless those people. I hope they're doing fine as well. But yeah, that being said, like, that needs to be one of the main topics of discussion, is getting some kind of shade there, which, like I said, based off of what Miami has, that would cost upwards of like $400,000. But, you know, if it's Shotgun that got to come out of pocket for it to make the fans more comfortable, or even, I guess, like I said, the fans wouldn't mind, but something needs to be done, definitely. And the ticket situation needs to be addressed as well, sooner rather than later.
Honestly, I think if you polled fans, and you think that, I think the argument can be made that the roof, the some kind of shade, like I said, like you said, a Hard Rock Stadium-esque build. I think fans would say that's much more important to them than what's going on with Lot J. Because right. Honestly, like,
yeah, that's true.
It's unbearable to be out there, man. I mean, I've got some stuff going on health wise, and I couldn't even go to the first game. I just had to sit it out altogether just because because of the heat. And you know, they do have, I believe they now have water stations, but like, I mean, honestly, there's no reason for a multi-billion
dollar. That's another
dollar.
Thing, bro. I forgot to mention that. Somebody said they ran out of water on Twitter too. So like, jeez. It's just stadium operations is just like going downhill. And I mean, of course, you know, the fans are as interactive as we are. Fans are going to let Shotgun know. It's on him on to how he responds, but I didn't mean to cut you off. Continue though.
No, you're good. Yeah. I mean, honestly, I don't understand why the NFL or even just the team haven't just struck a deal with Zephyr Hills or something. Just give people water. Why are you charging people $8 for a bottle of water? You know what I mean? And yeah, you, I believe you can bring in, you know, your, but like, how quickly is that ice going to melt? You know, I mean, the only game I've been to this year was the night game, and it was fantastic. It was, you know what I mean? And it was great. And honestly, like, you can speak to anybody who's been to a game in inside it. And did you go to games at the Georgia Dome? I assume you had been to a game at the Georgia Dome, right?
I've been to the Georgia Dome, but I've never been to a game there, oddly enough.
Okay, gotcha.
Gotcha. Enough.
Well,
yeah.
Just speaking from experience, you know, having been to the old Cowboy Stadium and AT&T Stadium, I mean, there's no reason for a team in the South to be playing a game outside. There's no excuse for it. I don't know how Tampa's been doing it for that long, but I mean, I'm sure their fans feel the same way. They'd love to have. I bet if you ask them, they'd feel the same way. Right. But there's no reason for a team to be playing and putting their fans in 100-degree weather. It's not safe. There's no way that, you know, that it can be helping the fan experience. That there's no excuse for that. And then as far as ticketing, like, come on, man. Like you said, we're already going to go see a bad team. And now you're going to make it even more difficult for – so here's what's happening. So we're sitting in traffic, okay? Then you got to find your parking spot. Then you have to walk, you know, walk to the stadium, and then you can't get in. Like, are you – there's no excuse for that whatsoever. So, I mean, I don't know what needs to be done, and I don't know who you talk to. I don't know if it's Shad Khan that just needs to make this decision or speak with Lenny Curry or something. But, you know, I think at one point they were talking about, I think at one point the Jags had rated one of the poorest fan experiences, and that's, you know, bad. you want to defend them because you love the team. But at some point you're like, yeah, that's pretty, pretty spot on.
Dude, like I want to chime in too on something like you were saying, like getting something like Miami. And well, you were saying like you don't know what has to be done. Well, one of the things, love him or hate him, you know, it's the the scale on him is kind of, it kind of varies on him. But love him or hate him, but Stephen Ross, if I can recall, Stephen Ross got their games, albeit they have the canopy. Stephen Ross got a majority of their games moved to, he went to the league, and don't quote me on this, but I think he had a lot of their games moved to 4 o'clock. You know, so I mean, and I know like every team
that
can't
would make
have,
a huge difference too.
Yeah,
that would make a
yeah.
huge difference.
And I don't know that, you know, I know every team clearly can't play at 4 o'clock. Okay, I know that, but I think like the teams in the South should be prioritized, especially if the NFL is supposed to be this, you know, this organization that loves the fans and wants more fans to come to the games. If you live, especially in the South, especially more specifically in Florida. All three of the Florida teams should have 4 o'clock games. And I know like logistics go into that, like, and I know like viewership and all of that goes into it. Like, do teams want to watch this team at 4 o'clock? Yada, 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 this, that, and the other. But like I said, like the NFL has always said that they want to improve the fan experience. And this is a way to improve the fan experience for those who are going to the game in person. Which is something that they've stressed, is they want to cater to the people that go to the games in person. So, and one more thing, the whole Lot J thing won't matter. You know what I'm saying? If the stadium keeps flunking on operations, you know what I'm saying? So this is something they got to get fixed before they can even like look into that type of thing, because people are going to be like, well, if the fan experience at the stadium is bad, then what should I expect for the operations at Lot J? And, you know, at Daly's place and this, that, and the other. But, you know, that's my personal take on the matter.
Yeah, and don't have any kind of numbers in terms of attendance. Not sure how things are going as far as this season. And, you know, but it's you look at the NFL fan has so many options and available to them now. You know, sometimes I find myself wanting to just stay home and watch the game. What's preventing me from just saying, I'm not going to go out there, or I'm not going to go subject myself to that kind of frustration. I'm going to stay home. I'm going to invite my friends over. We're going to watch the game on TV. We're going to stay cool. We're going to be able to eat food that's affordable.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And we're not NFL deal.
Exactly.
Right?
and we're not going to melt. You know what I mean? So what's preventing that from happening? I don't want to be completely overreactive, but you know, they gotta get something together. So let's move on to another positive before we get towards the end here. The defensive linemen, especially the younger guys, Josh Allen and Dwayne Smoot, man, he didn't have any sacks up until this season, and now he's got three. And, you know, just great to see him. Four for Josh Allen. Taven Bryan has flashed every once in a while. So I think I mentioned this on a previous episode. He's definitely been listening to Jaguar Twitter. So Taven Bryan has looked solid. And you know, we've talked about the future of the team with some of the older guys like you know, Calais Campbell not really knowing what's going to happen with him. So seeing these guys, it's even though you know, we still held a really good Saints team to 13 points. What are your takeaways from these younger guys flashing here early on in the season?
Yeah, man, like, of course, you know, I'm on Josh Allen watch because of the prediction I made, the ridiculous prediction I made in many podcasts ago of him getting 10 sacks. So
By the bye, not just 10 sacks, by the bye.
No,
wasn't that it?
No, it was by the year.
Oh, no, we're going to check in. We're going to check in.
Yeah, by the bye. Right. So, yeah, like, he's almost at the halfway mark, just one more sack. So, we'll see how that goes. I mean, with the Bengals, he might could get one or two more. So, he might be looking good by the bye. We'll see. But it's just good to see him translating. And, again, going back to what you were saying earlier when we were talking about when we drafted Jalen, he's another guy that just fell in our laps and just is proving that he should have been taken way ahead of where he was taken. So very thankful for him and just hope we can keep him in the future. That being said, Smoot has, you know, Smoot was a guy that was looking to find himself. He was every year. It's like, is this guy going to get cut? You know, is he going to be one of the roster cuts, this, that, and the other? And here he is. He's finally broken through. I think again, I'll go back to what I said earlier in the summer. You know, he added the weight. He's like at 285 ish or something like that. That's helped him. You know, being with Calais many, many years has helped him. So I'm glad to see him, you know, especially flourishing, because, you know, it was a struggle for him, and the beginning for him was kind of tough. And then Taven, man, like we're very hard on Taven on this podcast, you know. So anytime I can, you know, praise him and give him some kudos, I do, because he's one of the guys I've been lighting into the hardest. And he almost made a tackle in the backfield. I think it was Latavius Murray, or it might have been Kamara, but they kind of squirted through his arms. But still, like, he stopped his momentum. The rest of the team still was able to get there in the backfield and eventually make the tackle 2, 3, 4 yards behind the line of scrimmage. But that play wouldn't been possible, is what I'm saying, if it wasn't for Taven Bryan. So he flashed, and then he was flashing in the Houston Texans game too, like getting pressure on Deshaun Watson, and, you know, like, he's really showing some signs that he could be breaking through. And he's a guy that I do really want to watch going forward, albeit, you know, I always say we should have got Deshaun Watson, or Lamar Jackson over
Lamar Jackson
here. Yeah, but still, like, the more he can fill out his potential and make that pick look better than it was, the better for Jags fans. So, yeah, can't wait to see, like, if Taven can continue to trend upwards alongside Smoot and Allen.
I think one of the things with Taven, and I'll include myself in this, is it's going to be – he's going to have to do a lot to gain the approval of the fan base, because – Lamar Jackson was right there, and right. I think as the closer that we got to the draft, a lot more fans got more and more vocal about it. Mm-hmm. Lamar Jackson, and I think we kept seeing him mocked to us, and I think that was just fool's gold, because I don't think they were ever really interested in Lamar. I'm pretty sure they've come out and said that. So I think that was really just the media hyping us up, and that's not. That shouldn't be held against Taven, but it's going to be, because right. We did not get the guy that everybody wanted. I don't think we need him to be a Pro Bowler for people to be. I think what I would like, he needs to be better than Tyson Alualu. You know what I mean?
Fair.
And Tyson came in with a lot more expectations because he was drafted way higher.
Right.
So I think Taven just needs to be better than that. And he seems like he's a good guy. He seems like he's a guy that just wants to keep his head down and play football, which probably isn't too hard for him to do with guys like Marcell Dareus and Calais Campbell right there. And I think he seems like he's probably a pretty studious guy as well. Mm-hmm. And hopefully he's taking all that in, and we're kind of seeing that now, which is great, you know. So kudos to him, and it looks like he's been getting better and better every week, and that's really all you kind of ask for, because last season just seemed to be kind of a complete disaster, and then things in the preseason weren't looking so great either. So it's nice to see him just, you know, pin his head down, keep getting right. better every single week, and we'll see where it goes from there.
Dude, he's one of those guys, like, the more and more, like, of course, me and you were mad about the pick, of course, when it happened, but the more and more I think about it, like, a lot of people dislike him and don't believe he can do it, and the more and more I look at it from that perspective, the more and more I want to root for him, because, like, so many people dislike him and doubt him, you know what I'm saying? Like,
right. I will say this. I don't think I've ever seen a Taven Bryan jersey at the stadium.
Nah, all these Florida Gator fans, but no Taven Bryan jersey.
Anybody has. And that's very telling, because when we took Reggie Nelson, lots of Reggie Nelson jerseys, we took Derek Harvey, lots of Derek Harvey jerseys. So the Gator players have been popular here, but Taven has gotten no love whatsoever.
It's so odd.
And I think I kind of expressed that sentiment too. I do feel a little bad for him, because, you know, he didn't pick himself to come
right.
But ultimately, you know, we didn't get the guy that we wanted. So it's his fault. But anyway, moving on to the final negative here. Quincy Williams did get benched. However, Najee Good looked pretty solid in his spot. Quincy Williams, of course, I think I mentioned this to you, Jay, should probably file charges against Christian McCaffrey after that performance. I mean, man. And listen, Christian McCaffrey makes a lot of guys look foolish, but unfortunately, Quincy was the guy that last week. But yeah, I mean, what do you think? I mean, a guy that we really expect a lot out of, not a good look to be benched six games into the season.
Yeah, it happened before the game. They announced that Najee Good was going to be playing, and yeah, like you said, it was really a lot of it was that Christian McCaffrey game. And he's a guy that needs to – Quincy Williams is speedy, man, and he needs to break down and take better angles when it comes to guys like that, because they will make you look foolish, and that's exactly what happened. You know, that was kind of a concern with Quincy coming out of the draft was, you know, in space, could he break down defenders and, you know, make the adequate tackle and adequate angles? That was some of it, you know. But that being said, look, man, playing weak side linebacker, it can be very difficult because the more and more I think about it, Telvin Smith struggled in the beginning too. And he struggled with a lot of the things that Quincy Williams is struggling with, in a sense that he's struggling with being in the right place to make a tackle or being in play to make a tackle. And if we can recall that Telvin had Paul Posluszny playing next to him too, and that was still something that people was like, yeah, man, Taven gets out of place, or, you know, he'll take some false steps in the wrong direction, this, that, and the other. So that being said, you know, like, I think it's key not to be too hard on Quincy, because, you know, like, now that I think about it, it's been a hard transition, especially when you're young and you have these such high expectations at that position. I think we got to kind of be careful to not put too much on his plate, because another thing is, whereas Telvin Smith was coming from Florida State, Quincy Williams is coming from Murray State. OK, it's a drastic difference. So here you have this young man who, by the way, missed all of training camp because of the meniscus situation. He's coming from, you know, one of the smaller schools and trying to make a transition into the NFL. He just needs time, simply put. The talent that is there and the athleticism is there. He just needs time, and he needs somebody that's going to be patient with him in terms of a staff and work with him. And, you know, he needs that that veteran presence, which I'm sure Najee is going to provide for him. He's going to need those things to transition into the position. But, you know, I think, like, they put him in there a little too soon, basically. So that being said, Najee Good looked very good. No pun intended out there. He made I think he had a half a sack or a whole sack on the day. He clawed the holes well. But, you know, that's kind of what you expect. Albeit he was a backup. He's a guy that's battle tested. He's been around the league. He started before. I think he came from the Colts and played some games with the Eagles as well. 29 years of age. So we're talking about an 8, 7, 8, 9 year veteran, something like that. He's seen some things. You know, it's not a surprise that he was able to step in and fill those shoes well for Quincy Williams. But let's not give up on a young rookie just yet.
Yeah, definitely. Just like I said earlier with Gardner Minshew, he's going to have those games where he struggled. And listen, Christian McCaffrey is going to he's Quincy Williams isn't the last guy that Christian McCaffrey is going to embarrass. OK, the guy is just a freak of nature, man.
He embarrasses veterans.
he is something else, man. So, you know, like I said, let's not give up on Quincy just yet. He's got a lot of learning to do, and I think he's going to be a big part of the future of this team. So, yeah, that's last week, Jay, and, you know, we'll move on to this upcoming week against Cincinnati. We're on to Cincinnati, as the words of Bill Belichick. But, yeah, what do you expect out of this game? I think this is a good opportunity for them to bounce back and hopefully get to 3-4. The Bengals are just a mess right now. They do have, you know, some weapons such as Joe Mixon.
Right.
There has been reports that AJ Green has been practicing, but I think it's a very long shot that he ends up actually playing. I mean, honestly, if you're AJ Green or if you're the Bengals, why even rush? I mean, you got to think that they're probably heading into a year where they take a new guy at quarterback. Why risk, you know, getting your top guy injured. And right. But also, there's been trade rumors around AJ Green as well. If that's the case, you know, then why put him in jeopardy? So we'll see what happens. But what do you expect out of this game? You know, against a Bengals team that has their whole own set of problems over there in Cincinnati.
Yeah, I think it's key that, you know, the Jaguars don't go in here and underestimate the Bengals. While they are last and next to last in a lot of key categories I'm going to mention, you know, Zach Taylor, what scares me about the Bengals, it goes back to what we said in the past about Todd Wash struggling against brilliant offensive minds. Now, Zach Taylor doesn't have a lot of talent there, granted, but he was highly regarded in terms of an offensive mind when he was with Sean McVay. With the Los Angeles Rams as the quarterback coach for Jared Goff. And look, we can look at it now and look, Jared Goff looks like complete you-know-what right now. So, I mean, and his quarterback coach, meanwhile, is in Cincinnati. So, I don't know, maybe you can put something into that. But before that, he was a receivers coach or assistant receivers coach with him. So, I mean, we all seen, like, the brilliant stuff that tree can come up with, that McVay tree and those guys on that end. That being said, you know, like, I just don't want to turn on my TV and see Todd Wash get gashed by this rookie head coach who's only 36 years of age, I believe he is. He's like the same age as McVay or somewhere in that ballpark. But I think that being said, the talent just simply isn't there. So this is one the Jags should win. We're talking about a team that is dead last against the rush, 32nd. They allow, what is it? I think it's 184.5 yards a game. As we all know, the Jags want to establish themselves as a running team. They were in the top 10 rushing before last week, so maybe this will get them back there. But that's what they want to do. And I don't think that Cincinnati has the talent to stop them from that perspective. Of course, that'll open up opportunities for Gardner Minshew as well. And I don't think he's going to run into a buzzsaw like we saw with the Saints, because, again, going back to what I was saying, like, clearly the talent there in New Orleans is totally different from what the Jaguars are going to see here. So that being said, they also beat up, by the way, like three of their starters in the secondary surfaced on the injury report and didn't practice or were limited. So that's another thing. Like, they are significantly more beat up than us. But yeah, in terms of all of that, I think the Jaguars can win this one, but they do not need to go in there underestimating this team. And hopefully they've been practicing hard and practicing, making the right adjustments and corrections to go on a win streak, you know. Like, so it's three winnable games coming up: the Bengals, the Jets, and then the Houston Texans, who will have to travel to London to face us, and they barely beat us in the first place. So we'll see.
Yeah, looking at the Bengals as far as, you know, what their team looks like, of course, Andy Dalton's still there. He's got through these first six games, averaging 277 yards through the air. He's got seven touchdowns, five interceptions, and running an 34.1 QBR as far as ESPN statistic. Not great. Yeah, but the Jaguars have a history of making bad quarterbacks look
yes,
good.
Exactly.
So let's not count them out. As far as the running game, Joe Mixon, I believe he did miss some time. It still says he's played six games, but he hasn't really been utilized fully. 74 carries on the season for 252 yards. That's good for only a 3.4 yard average, and he has no rushing touchdowns yet, which has proven great for my fantasy team. But you know, he's not having a breakout year. And then as far as receivers, you got Tyler Boyd with 40 catches for 416 yards, and then the next receiver is John Ross with 16 catches. So it's not really an offense that's been able to spread the ball around too much. Tyler Eifert certainly isn't the guy that he used to be, and that's credited to injuries, unfortunately, for that guy. Defensively, nothing really standing out. Let's see here. The defensive lineman, Sam Hubbard, it leads the team in sacks, it looks like, with three. So nobody really sticking out defensively as well. I mean, look, the Bengals, they are winless for a reason, right? They're 0-6 and down there with the Dolphins and well, I guess the Redskins have now won on. I mean they kind of fell into a victory over the Dolphins, so it's not like they're doing too much either. And then of course the Broncos just got schlacked tonight against the Chiefs, even without Patrick Mahomes. So they are among some the worst teams. But again, we just saw the Cowboys lose to the Jets, so you never know what can happen in the NFL. So yeah, we will see. Hopefully we get a rebound game and a nice game from Gardner Minshew, and I think this is a good follow-up for the last couple of weeks. So yeah, make sure you stay tuned to the Jaguars Wire for all the coverage leading up to the game. AJ Green will not be facing up against Jalen in the revenge game of their brawl, so we won't see that. We won't be seeing that happen. But yeah, that's pretty much it, guys. Jay, you know, we'll wrap up here. What does everybody have to look forward to? Where can they find it? And then we'll get out of here.
Yeah, man. With it being Friday, it'll probably be kind of a chilled day. On the Jags Wire end, we'll just get out a couple articles tomorrow. Saturday, we kind of use as our college day, if you will, draft day. I don't know if y'all noticed that it's a lot of, like, we talk about mock drafts. And then Daniel does the draft prospect thing. So I kind of use that as a day to, you know, with it being college football on TV, kind of use that as a day to reflect on some college football. And then of course Sunday we'll be up and at it early in the morning, as we have been, starting you off with a couple pregame posts, roughly 3 to 4. Have some in-game posts during the game. Hopefully it's an eventful one. It should be. And then we have post-game posts as well, just talking about the results and who looked good, who looked bad, this, that, and the other. So we got a lot going on in the next coming days. Stay tuned to the Jaguars Wire. And, yeah, hopefully you all enjoy the content this week and it comes with a win.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, guys, so of course, we have the we appreciate all of the support that we've gotten so far. Again, if you want to support the podcast, please go to Apple Podcasts and give us that 5-star review if you believe we have earned it. And again, we're on SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn, Audio Boom, and of course, if you want to follow us, we're at Jags Den Podcast, at the Jaguars Wire. You can find Jay at SportsGrind _ Don, myself at Phil the Filipino, FiliPino, and Jacob is at _J_Della. But that is it for us this week, you guys. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Jags Den Podcast. Everybody stay safe out there. Go Jaguars. And you know what? Because Jacob's not here, I'll cover it. Always remember, Miles Jack was not, will not, and will never be down. We'll see you next time.